Board performance and cognitive diversity in the boardroom. Welcome to the Better Boards podcast series. A wide range of perspectives in the boardroom is critical to effective corporate governance. Multiple views on the possible outcomes of any action makes for a decision-making process that is more likely to take into account the various risks, consequences, and implications of possible actions. Progress has been made in recent years, and for example, gender diversity has increased. We now see a shift in the discussions and the realization that diversity is more complex, and what really is needed is to go beyond the labels and achieve cognitive diversity. In this podcast, I'm delighted to talk with Stephen Page, head of the EMEA Board Engagement at the Nasdaq Center for Board Excellence. We are talking about board performance and cognitive diversity in the boardroom. I'm Dr. Sabine Demkowski, founder and managing partner of Better Boards. We make the boards of the most ambitious organizations more effective. Our mission at Better Boards is to contribute to creating better boards. We do this by providing clients with an evidence-based approach for board evaluations and board development programs. To fulfill our mission, we give a voice to all who care about creating better boards. A warm welcome, Stephen.
It's great to be here, Sabine.
No, really, very much appreciate that you make the time for contributing to the podcast series. You are at the Nasdaq Center for Corporate Governance. The center is a global information hub that integrates expertise, insights, and technology to accelerate the understanding of corporate governance and sustainable business practice. What is the ambition of the center?
Well, thank you for that. Actually, things have changed a little bit. At the beginning of this year, the Corporate Governance Center, it merged or rolled into a Board Excellence Center, which NASDAQ effectively acquired through an acquisition. And so it decided to double down, if you will, on board performance. And that was because NASDAQ was evolving its own ESG capability around listings and green and sustainability bonds. The Governance Center now actually is the Board Excellence Center. And as the name implies, it focuses very much on the board.
What is actually the interest? I mean, one could naively ask, why does NASDAQ care about board performance?
It's a good question. I think the first thing I would say is that NASDAQ these days, which comes as a surprise to people, is a global technology business, staying true to its roots as the first electronic exchange. I mean, NASDAQ powers, I think I'll probably get this wrong for my PR guys, but I think it's 115 at the moment, market infrastructure, businesses around the world, over 50 countries. So it very much is a global technology business. And as part of that, it's very much interested in the performance of its clients, and that speaks also to its purpose and its mission, and in actually giving clients the best technology, the best tools. And in the context of governance, specifically, NASDAQ provides three specific tools in the context of board collaboration or board portal software, in board evaluations, and also an ESG reporting tool. So NASDAQ is very much a part of wanting to see the companies do as well as they can.
Thank you for providing the context so that our listeners actually understand where you are sitting. In recent podcasts, we talked about diversity and the challenges that are associated with integrating people of a different gender, different race, different religion, different background at board level. For years, there is much talk about gender diversity.
Yeah, well, gender diversity is great, and I'm a big, big supporter of diversity generally, but we need to understand there's a crucial difference between what people call demographic or identity diversity, which is effectively diversity based on groupings, whether it be gender, ethnicity, or religion. The problem with that is that belonging to a group, by definition, also means, to a certain extent, means there's a lack of diversity. One example might be, Sabine, if there's a group of you and your maybe your colleagues, a group of ladies on a board or on a senior executive committee, and you decide you want to up the gender diversity and appoint me, shall we say, to your board, that could be fine. But effectively, we've got the same sort of background. We've gone to the same sort of uni, red brick unis. Our children have been educated, gone to the same sort of schools. I'm going to have much the same thought process that you and your fellow colleagues have. There's a limit, therefore, to the diversity that can apply in that circumstance. And you might be better appointing another woman who came from a different background. So diversity is important, But I think the diversity you obtain when you look at demographic diversity is weaker than it could be if it were cognitive diversity.
Absolutely. And I've seen it so many times that, yes, they had women on boards, but in essence, these women had very much the same backgrounds as the male colleagues. They went to the same schools, same universities, had the same city careers. Yeah. So let's move on and talk about cognitive diversity. What does cognitive diversity actually mean?
Yeah, I think diversity of thought, I think, is the best way to look at it. So we're talking here a diversity of perspective, of insights, experience, and just, if you will, different thinking styles. And the reason why that's so important is because actually all of us have blind spots. We all have different frames of reference, but those frames of reference, my frames of reference, your frames of reference, they actually contain blind spots. And therefore, we need to combine as many people as we can with different frames of reference so that we, if you will, cancel out those blind spots. You know, accuracy of being an expert in your profession is not enough. Often when you have to reach decisions, you need to do that by looking at different aspects, and therefore accuracy or be an expert, you need more than that. You need true diversity. It's collective intelligence is probably a good word. That's what we're seeking here.
Absolutely.
There's an example that just came to mind. I forget the year. I think it was 2001 that demonstrating this. There were two social psychologists, and it was a US group and a Japanese group. And they were shown some video clips, some underwater scenes, I think it was. And they were asked to describe what they had seen. And the funny thing is, very strange in many ways, they saw different things. For example, the US group, I think it was the US group, they saw fish, different types of fish were flying around. And that's what they described. Whilst the Japanese group described the background, not referring to the fish at all. So this is an example of different blind spots that we can have. In this instance, it's probably explained by cultural differences, you know, being born and raised in the US or Japan. But I think that's fascinating. I think it's fascinating as well to think, imagine you combined that US group and that Japanese group. So you had their collective intelligence because their blind spots then will be cancelled out. So I think it's a really interesting example of what we're talking about here.
And intellectually, it's interesting, but in practice, it is so, so hard to bring it to life. Because I can see now, or I can imagine that many listeners are now thinking, yes, fantastic idea. This is exactly what I want to have on my board. Now, how can you actually make sure that when you are recruiting or when you are thinking about the composition of your board, how can you make sure that you really have this cognitive diversity around the table?
The first thing, to the most important thing, is one awareness. I think people have got bogged down a little bit with diversity, which we were speaking about earlier, being whether gender or BAME. And I think somehow they've lost really the focus of it, which is to introduce diversity. And skill matrixes, which is beloved, as you know, from someone who practices board evaluation, is very important, but they don't track this. So I think awareness, the nomination committee really needs to be aware of this, and there needs to be training, I think, on that, because I think it's criminally underused. So I'm a big supporter of training a nominations committee. And also, I personally have benefited, interestingly, from having a cognitive diversity test myself as part of a group of people at NASDAQ. It was an external third-party provider. And it was fascinating. They divide, it's a great experience, actually, but they divide you up in effectively to four quadrants, or your analysts, which represents four parts of the brain. There's different parts, safekeeping and feeling. I think there's a self, an experimental self. Anyway, but they produce these profiles, having had, after interviewing you and giving you a bunch of questions to answer. And that seeks to identify where you sit on certain matrices. They show all these things graphically. It's fascinating. And I think it's really, really important. I would say that the most important thing is to ensure that you and that your nominations committee are actually aware of what cognitive diversity is all about.
Sounds good. But when I see search and selection processes, it's discussed on a very high level. I haven't seen yet that any of these tests are really integrated in the search and selection processes.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think, frankly, that's a major oversight. So, because I think what you need to be doing is you need to be increasing the pools from which you recruit. So nominations can, when it comes to succession planning, they really should be looking at ensuring that the next individual not only possesses the requisite experience and knowledge, but also has the right fit from a cognitive diversity perspective. So I think it's important that they widen the pools and that the agencies that are being used are aware of this. One thing I'd like to say here is that a common misconception, I must admit, does annoy me, and it's spoken of by people, very senior people sometimes. There seems to be, maybe this comes back to quotas of years ago, when people are appointed and they appoint someone of a diverse background, as to say, be it whether it could be gender or cognitive, and they think there's a dilution. They use that term. It's a sort of we'll accept it because it's a good thing, maybe socially, but you know what? It's diluted. They seem to think in somehow or another, by making this appointment, the board is weaker, but on the other hand, it might be better from a social perspective. That is absolutely wrong. It's a common mistake and a fatal mistake. When you appoint somebody of diverse talent, it still means that individual should have the requisite skills and knowledge. Absolutely. Diversity would be a very bad idea if the individual doesn't have the skills. That's not what it's about. That does mean to say, though, that you do have to widen the pool. But the reality, if you widen that pool, you will find individuals out there with diverse backgrounds who have very much the skill sets that you require as well. It does not mean dumbing down.
I mean, two thoughts there. We both know these social studies that show when the times get tough and economically it is challenging out there, people tend to recruit even more people who are like themselves. We see a narrowing of perspectives, actually, when the economic times are challenging. How can listeners who listen to our podcast now step out of this notion?
I think to me, it's just about performance. I happen to be socially, I think, the right thing to do for boards, for societal values and everything else to be diverse. But actually, first and foremost, it's about performance, about board performance. It's about how boards perform. And I think that's what one needs to keep the focus on. And diversity increases performance, not the other way around. So that will be my answer, I think.
In the board evaluations I conduct, I very hear often when I conduct the interviews with individual directors that they find it actually very hard to bring controversial issues to the table. They find it hard to really ask a critical question because, after all, they know that when you do this, you have to choose your battles wisely, number one.
Yeah.
Number two is they don't wish to rock the boat. If they do this too often, they know that they fall out of favor with a powerful chairman. They know that they are the odd one out and they don't feel that they're fully integrated in the board if they do this.
Right. That sounds to me more of an issue, but very related issue of board dynamics. I've always thought that the flip side, if you will, of cognitive diversity is board dynamics. So I think the two are very closely associated.
And I think absolutely. Just want to make the point. It's really important that, yes, you can take the first steps by being aware of it. You can also take the first steps by actually consciously thinking about it, bringing someone on board. But this doesn't stop there. You also have to make sure that they are properly integrated, that you can properly leverage them.
Yeah. What can happen, and unfortunately it does happen sometimes, you can bring somebody with a diverse background in, going back to diversity, you bring someone with a diverse background in, but actually if there's the wrong dynamics on the board, that individual can very easily be squeezed out.
Absolutely.
I may come in with a diverse background and diverse thoughts, but if the board dynamics are not right, I'm just going to be squeezed out. And at the end of the day, I will probably find myself conforming with the values and the norms and the behaviours on that board. So my diversity has been squeezed out. And unfortunately, that does occur sometimes. And that's why we really need to be careful of dynamics when we introduce diversity.
So what can a chairman do to really leverage the diversity, above all the cognitive diversity?
Yeah, I think the two biggest problems, I think, answer to your question, that both talk to this, there's something called information cascades and dominance dynamics. They're both well-known issues when it comes to board dynamics. And information cascades, which is talking to your point, is what often happens is the CEO or the chairman or another senior executive says something at the beginning of the meeting. And as they can cascade, it just cascades down the board. No one really wants to rock the boat, to use your phrase.
Yeah.
And so what happens is we all mimic each other. And any thoughts I might have had by the time it comes to me, I just mumble something or just say, unfortunately, this does happen. So again, directors simply don't speak up. And there are studies showing that, unfortunately, this does happen. And dominance dynamics, a similar thing as well. If you've got a very strong CEO, should we say, that CEO needs to be aware of that and therefore perhaps speaks last, coming back to what people could do. Sometimes the CEO speaks last on an issue. And so I think that's a good point. Sometimes having someone speak who's the proposer, but not have other directors sort of speaking until that's out, can give other people the idea to express opinions before perhaps the CEO weighs in with his or her thoughts.
And do you have a good tip for someone who finds himself very often in the position that they think, oh, actually, I have a different thought. I would like to bring it out, but quite often I bit my tongue and haven't done it.
Yeah, I think that's a difficult one, really. I mean, at the end of the day, we're all, frankly, if we're on a board and we have a responsibility to speak up, it can be difficult, but that's what we're there for. Yeah, presumably our thoughts are welcomed, otherwise we wouldn't have been appointed. So I think there is a responsibility on the individuals as well to speak up. And so I think that's part of the responsibility of the directors as well.
Fantastic, Stephen. Could talk for hours, but I'm afraid we have to stop here. Thank you so much. But before you go, what should our listeners take away from this podcast? Maybe three short things they should take away from this.
Gosh, only three. First off, make sure you understand the difference, if you like, demographic or identity diversity. That's diversity by grouping. So whether you group by religion or by ethnicity, and cognitive diversity, which is talking about diversity of thought. I think that's critical to understand the difference. I think recognize as well, linked to that, that we all have blind spots. All of us have blind spots, and therefore increasing diversity should mean a means of cancelling out those blind spots. That's, I think, important, recognising that. And my third point, the one I got quite animated earlier on, is that introducing diversity does not mean diluting the quality of decision making or anything else on the board, quite the reverse. And so, that's my number one takeaway for people who are listening to this. Diversity does not mean diluting the pool.
Thank you so much, Steve. It was a
Thank
great pleasure
much.
Talking with you. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Sabine. Bye-bye.
If you care about creating better boards and would like to hear more about our research, our approach to board evaluations, or if you would like to be considered for contributing to the Better Boards podcast series, please do get in touch. We always love to hear from you. You can best reach us on info@better-boards.com. Thank you for listening.